And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. We're just speaking with Carl Zimmer. His book on heredity is She Has Your Mother's Laugh. Our next guest is Richard Munson, who's a prolific in his own right with his efforts to bring clean energy to the nation. But today, he speaks of Nikola Tesla, about whom he has written a book called Tesla, Inventor of the Modern. Tesla was an eccentric genius, as our guest says, even a visionary. Nikola Tesla invented the radio, robots, and remote control. His electric induction motors run our appliances and factories, yet he has been largely overlooked by history. Now, why is that? Until now, with Tesla electric cars roaming our roadways, why was Tesla not a household name like Edison or Westinghouse? Richard Munson, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, very much enjoyed your book. I'd like to start with a quote from Nikola that came up several times in your book from 1892. We wind a simple ring or iron with coils. We establish the connection to the generator, and with wonder and delight, we note the effects of strange forces which we bring into play, which allows us to transform, to transmit, and direct energy at will. That quotation, I mean, in the late 1890s, it must have seemed like he was a sorcerer creating and sending energy where he wished. We all take electricity for granted, I believe, and this book sort of takes us back into a time when the mystery and the excitement of what electricity could do for us was presented to us.
It was mind-boggling to most people at the time, and even Tesla himself admitted that nobody really understands exactly what electricity is, these rotating magnetic forces. We understand what it does. It keeps our beer cool, runs our elevators, etc. But particularly at the time, it was a new source of energy that he was viewed as the magician. He was able to create lightning, which had been something that had been reserved simply for nature before. He was able to wave wands and make them glow, even though they were not connected to wires. He was, in fact, a magician.
Yeah, I think what you're describing is the types of showmanship in his demonstration, and one particular demonstration at Columbia College in 1891 during what they called the War of the Currents, between alternating current, of which he was a proponent, and direct current, which was Edison's deal. Tell us about his showmanship and how he got people excited about these different things.
Well, this was a surprise to me, to be quite honest, because he was most happy when he was by himself in his laboratory doing his experiments. But he also became alive when he wanted to reveal these wonders to a larger crowd. So at Columbia College and at other lectures, particularly in Europe, in Paris and in London, he regaled the attendees, not only with electricity, but I remember one demonstration in New York City where he wanted to create a whole new science called telemetonics, he called it, but it would be robotics today. So he built a pond in the middle of Madison Square Garden and had his electric battery-powered boat maneuver around the pond, moving it back and forth, making it almost dance like a water bug, if you will. And then he asked the crowd if anybody wanted to ask the boat a question. Somebody asked, something like, what's the square root of 16? And he secretly, because he had mastered how to individualize messages, he regaled the crowd by having the boat's light flash four times. And as he said, he's never had such a reaction, and the crowd was clearly astonished in wonder.
There's so much to talk about with Nikola Tesla, and I would imagine that for you, doing the work you do in clean energy, Tesla has always been somewhat of a figure of intrigue for you. Is that why you wrote the book?
Initially, I wrote the book I think all of us know a little bit about Nikola Tesla,
exactly.
Something about that he gave us the electric motor. I think what tipped the scales initially for me, I was reading an article that had a quote from Larry Page, who is Google's co-founder, and he referred to Nikola Tesla as his hero. And I sort of thought, if this guy's a hero to Larry Page, there has to be something here that makes him entertaining. And in the course of the research, yes, I discovered that he was an early clean energy pioneer. But I also, one of the great discoveries for me was in the archive of the Smithsonian. In the back room, the librarian revealed to me this box that included letters from Nikola Tesla to his friends and his business associates. And so suddenly, this man that at least the people who know him sometimes just review him as a superman, as this almost supernova, magic inventor. But the letters sort of reveal the personal side to him. And he was indeed a charming individual who had friends and great interaction. So the book sort of developed and became, he became more interesting to me the more I learned about him.
Right, right. So interesting, his childhood. And there is one somewhat common thread, I would say, throughout a lot of people who have, who have accomplished greatness. However, against all odds, because they were always trying to measure up to one or the other of their parents who rejected them, essentially. And I found it interesting that Nikola Tesla was actually not perceived by his parents as the brighter of their two sons. It was his older brother. Talk about the relationship between Tesla and his father and how it influenced the rest of his life.
Well, his older brother, Dane, was about 5 years older and was Nikola's idol and certainly the family favorite. It obviously was extremely bright and thought that he would follow in the father's footsteps. He died, unfortunately, from being thrown from a horse. And horribly, Nikola had to witness his brother's death and then also get woken up in the middle of the night by his mother to come in and kiss his dead, brother goodbye. I mean, just, startling. You would think that the parents would then rally around the surviving son, but no, they always were looking for what Dane would have done if he were still alive. And so Tesla admitted that he grew up lacking confidence because everything he did, his parents, particularly his father, would say, Dane would have done it better. So Nikola claims several times that that sort of rejection forced him to develop a variety of quirks. But most importantly, sort of forced him to, go into his own mind and begin to imagine. He would go off on journeys during daydreams or nighttime dreams where he'd travel around the world and make friends with people that he believed were as real as his real friends. Mm. And later in life, he came to the conclusion that it was that type of seeking his father's approval and going into his own mind that allowed him to sort of master his, intellectual, capacity.
Yeah, he wasn't just a scientist. He had, he was an eccentric. And as you say in the book, he spoke something like 8 languages fluently. He recited poetry from memory. And yet there was something that about him that, although he was a great inventor and innovator and a visionary, he wasn't able to bring these projects sort of to commercial success. And that is why, or is that why, he wasn't really a household name until Elon Musk named his car company after him.
Well, to address your first issue, one of the greatest stories to me was Tesla's view that inventing required sort of multiple perspectives on nature. And so he thought it needed to integrate both his love of the humanities as well as his love of science. So yes, he did recite poetry. He created poetry. He developed and envisioned his revolutionary electric motor while walking through a Budapest park, quoting the lengthy poem of Goethe's Faust, and then, drew the design of it with a stick in the sand. So this linkage of humanities and science was key to him. And to be honest, I think he would today be somewhat aghast at the move away from the humanities that many colleges are taking, because I think he views that true inventing, this disruptive new approaches, requires that integration that he found so necessary.
And I'd like to talk about that a little further. For an example, Bell Labs in Murray Hill, New Jersey, before divestiture of AT&T, was doing general research, like why is the sky blue? I mean, a number of researchers were brought in, scientists, top scientists were brought in, and they have a number, I think they averaged 2 patents a week at some point. I mean, they were really coming up with some fascinating technologies, but they were allowed to go out and do general research, and that's really not done today, is it?
Not really. I think Tesla and Bell Labs, as you note, were, you know, some of the last just curiosity-focused inventing. You know, today so much of it is pragmatic. How do I, you know, get a profit from the product that I developed? And it also tends to be done by teams of, you know, people from universities, federal research labs, corporate research centers. I think Tesla would be a bit aghast at the reality that a lot of research projects are now done by 100 or more, you know, scientists at the same time. And he'd be asking himself and us, you know, why are we not more nurturing the individual, encouraging the eccentric, encouraging somebody to think, you know, outside the box, like what happened at Bell Labs. But certainly that was his view of life. I think he would suggest that we've lost a little bit of that. Not to say that, you know, we shouldn't have teams of researchers that are doing great things, but somehow or another we've sort of lost the individual eccentric. And he would, I'm sure, love to encourage it to come back.
And if you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Richard Munson. He has written Tesla, Inventor of the Modern. Now, I know he's eccentric. He's 6'3", good-looking guy, really a showman, a salesman, also a scientist. But I'm still trying to figure out why he isn't a household name before Elon Musk named his company after him, because alternating current is the way we do business today in distributing electricity across long spans of distances. So he was successful. He worked out something with Westinghouse so that he was not commercially successful. He didn't die a rich man, but it wasn't his technology the technology that is driving electricity today?
Yes. What he gave us, long-distance electricity transmission, be that alternating current, the electric motor, robots, remote control, all of these things are the foundations of our modern economy. And it is a puzzle as to why he is not better known, particularly in this country, compared to Marconi and Edison. You know, my guess is that what he came up with were sort of systems and things that consumers have a hard time grasping. Edison, in contrast, came up with consumer devices, be that you know, the phonograph or the motion picture, whereas Tesla came up with a system of sending electricity long distances, an electric motor that none of us really see. It's in all of our appliances, it's in our computers, it's in on the electric cars. We don't really see it. And so I think both the lack of his having business success and therefore having a name on a company that continued after his death, but also his lack of consumer products that were associated with his name, I think has caused sort of the general public not to recognize who he is. But as we mentioned at the beginning, you know, one of the inspirations for me was people like Larry Page of Google and, you know, Elon Musk, who viewed him as a hero because, in fact, he was coming up with systemic, disruptive, you know, technological advances.
Yeah. Can we hover a little bit longer on this relationship, well, or the contrast between Thomas Edison, who we as elementary school children learn, you know, created electricity, invented electricity, and we don't learn a thing about Nikola Tesla. Hopefully that's changed since I was in elementary school. Do you have any idea?
I don't think it has changed, unfortunately. Even at the Smithsonian Exhibition Hall on Electricity, there are like 8 different large statues of Thomas Edison as, you know, the Wizard of Menlo Park. And there's a tiny, you know, on the wall, there's a tiny little portrait of Nikola Tesla. And you're sort of thinking, I thought Nikola Tesla won the war in the current year.
Exactly.
But, you know, as it's written, you don't really see that. The two of them had this very odd relationship. Tesla actually worked for Edison. His first job was to help install Edison phone systems in Budapest and Paris. He did such a great job that they sent him to New York City to work with a great man himself. And the two of them just did not get along. They were so different in style. You know, Edison is, or was, you know, rather rumpled and, to be honest, a bit crass. You know, Tesla, as you noted, was quite cosmopolitan. He spoke 8 different languages. You know, he dressed every day like he was going to the opera. You know, plus the two of them just had different inventing styles. Edison was more of, you know, a trial and error inventor, a genius doing it, but that was his approach, whereas Tesla was far more cerebral and used, you know, mathematical formulas to figure out, you know, what, you know, opportunities were. So, and where they really split is when Tesla felt that Edison had offered him a bonus if he improved the output of Edison generators. And so Tesla worked every evening and on the weekends for about 6 months, tripled the output of the generators, went back to the great man and said, you know, can I get my bonus now? And in probably the crassest slight that you could have to a new immigrant, Edison laughs at him and says, you know, when you become a full-fledged American, you'll appreciate an American joke. Oh. Tesla obviously did not laugh. He picked up his bowler hat and left. But that sort of just demonstrates their differences. But, you know, Edison has, because I think there are all these consumer products that are associated with him, and he has been made an American hero, we know of him. And I'm not, you know, trying to suggest in my book at all that he should not be praised,
right,
or anything taken away from him. But I think what has been underappreciated is the genius and both the actual products as well as the visions Tesla gave us need to be better appreciated.
Right, right. Well, I was somewhat relieved in your book when I read even Tesla himself, as you mentioned already, said that he didn't really understand how electricity works. And so I don't feel bad about asking this question. So Edison was a proponent, or he put forth direct DC, direct current. And as John has said, Tesla did AC-DC, alternating current. And direct current can only travel about a mile or so, whereas AC-DC, mm-hmm. alternating current, energy can be everywhere, as Tesla said. Energy is everywhere. And so could you contrast those two and explain, you know, why one is more effective than the other?
Well, the key answer is that alternating current can travel farther.
Yeah.
And therefore you can make it available to more people. And in fact, it was a bit of a, you know, a philosophical difference between the two of them. Edison felt that electricity would remain a luxury product only available for those rich enough to put, you know, small generators in the basement of their mansion. Whereas Tesla had this vision that electricity should be available to everyone and that his ability to, you know, transport it long distances. The most obvious example was tapping the power of Niagara Falls and sending it an amazing 400 miles down to New York City to run the new subway system and to light, you know, the Great White Way of Broadway. 400 miles in comparison to, as you noted, you know, a direct current can really only go a mile at most. So the New York Times referred to Tesla's achievement in Niagara Falls as the technological advancement or achievement of the 19th century, and that the credit for it, according to the Times, went to Tesla alone for his brilliance. So he won the war of the current. I must say, in the course of that war, Mr. Edison proved himself to be a little bit crass because he was trying to protect his investment in direct current and portray alternate alternating current as too dangerous, too, you know, too powerful. So one of his associates actually lined up a variety of different animals, zapped them with, you know, low-level direct currents, and virtually nothing happened to them, and then cranked up the power on alternating current. And it's gruesome to say, but, I mean, killed dogs and cats and horses, and it was horrible, all to sort of try to prove the point that alternating current was, in fact, dangerous. Of course, Tesla refuted that because he, on stage at these various demonstrations we were talking about, had alternating current flying around, and he was standing right there. It sort of went through his body, and, you know, by being able to show that he brought power from Niagara Falls, demonstrated that this was just that he had the better technology. He eventually won the war of the current, but for a while it was a gruesome war.
Well, we all know that history was not as kind to Tesla, but recent history has not been as kind either. Reading Walter Isaacson's book, The Innovators, he just makes one reference to Tesla, saying he couldn't commercialize his products, rather than talking about some of these great things that he did. So even people who are highly regarded and they're writing history of technology today aren't really giving Tesla what he probably deserves. But there was one thing in The Innovator's book that was fascinating, and that was the motivation that he provided to Larry Page. I guess in 1998, or actually before that, as you said, he was a childhood hero. Tesla was a hero to Larry Page. And he went on to say that it was a really sad, sad story. You've got a great invention, but you didn't have the right funding, or you weren't able to get it commercialized, as he read the early biographies of Tesla. But that had a lot to do with motivating Larry Page, because he talks about in 1998, Google had 518 million hyperlinks out of approximately 3 billion that were on the World Wide Web at the time. So that's just basically one-sixth. And Larry Page said, it was kind of like Nikola Tesla's problem. You make an invention you think is great, but so you need to get it to be used by as many people as possible. So what Tesla was not able to do by trying to commercialize and get everyone to use it, Larry Page was able to use, and it sounds like this was a tremendous motivation for Larry Page to really put Google on the map and to make sure that his invention was known by everyone, and it is today.
Well, I think you touch a point. I think today's scientists or researchers or entrepreneurs do now look back on Tesla both as a genius and as an inspiration. The downside, of course, is that Tesla was a horrible businessman. And in a part, that was because he was an idealist. Consider what he did with George Westinghouse, who had purchased the patents for Tesla's electric motor and had given him a $2.50 royalty for every horsepower coming out of these motors. So Tesla was going to be rich for a very long time as a result of this contract. But after the Niagara Falls project, Westinghouse was a little stretched thin, and bankers like J.P. Morgan, you know, tried to squeeze him out to be able to take over his company. And so Westinghouse was trying to figure out some way to cut some costs. And he turns to Tesla, and Tesla, he has the contract, he has the patents, he has everything in his power. But he turns to Westinghouse and says, you have been kind to me, and you are the one who is going to bring my ideal motor to the world. And therefore, let me tear up this contract. That contract was probably worth, over the course of his lifetime, you know, several hundred million dollars. But he did that because, you know, money wasn't that important to him. He was a horrible businessman, and he was this idealist, thinking that what he was doing is he was bringing electricity to the world. And Westinghouse was going to help him do that, and so I tear up the contract because the money wasn't important.
Yeah, and that goes back to Thomas Edison with his alliance with J.P. Morgan and how the robber barons were trying to prop up Edison. And there was a ruthlessness about it, but business can be ruthless. And, yeah, he wasn't able to capitalize on that, that's for sure. Boy, I'm trying to think.
He was always balancing, if you will, this, oddly enough, you could call it apocryphal or just odd. Tesla was actually born at the stroke of midnight between the 9th and 10th of July 1856. And I, as a sort of biographer, used that, you know, analogy of him being born in both today and tomorrow as a struggle that he had throughout his life of trying to balance between dealing with the realities of today, things like patents and lawyers and, you know, the basics of running a business, and on the opposite side, sort of envisioning the future. And when he was too far on one side, when he was too far in the practical, in the today, Nikola Tesla became bored. If he was too far on the other side, too far out doing envisioning the future, he came up with some pretty wacky things. So it was fun to sort of watch him throughout his life attempt to balance, if you will, today and tomorrow.
Richard, we would be absolutely remiss if we didn't ask you one final question about, well, you know, our listeners are listening to us over the radio waves. And this is another area where Tesla, you know, he invented radio, but he's not really credited for it. It's Marconi. Why was that? What happened there?
Well, the Supreme Court ruled that, in fact, it was Tesla's patents that were the basis for all radio, including Marconi's work. I think why Marconi gets the credit is that he was probably, in this case, the better showman than Tesla was. And as they were reaching, you know, his big advances on radio, unfortunately, Tesla's laboratory on Fifth Avenue in New York burned down, and he lost all of his equipment and all of his notes. And so it took him, he lost time, if you will, in the struggle to come up with, you know, the actual demonstrations of radio. And Marconi was able to send signals and get great publicity for it. So I think in most people's mind, they think of Marconi as the one to do it. But when you go back and look at the papers and see, at least again, where the Supreme Court ruled what were the real inventions behind making radio possible, again, it's Nikola Tesla who brought us both radio, remote control, robots, electricity. So a remarkable set of achievements by a man that is not as appreciated as at least I think he should be.
Yeah, I think we agree with you. Tesla, Inventor of the Modern, is the name of the book. Richard Munson, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Cool Science Radio.